Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook.
Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Fugerski.
Hi, and welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Fugerski, and I'm your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs on the first and third Sundays of every month at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. Yeah, that's funny today because we had to change time. So I'm going a little later this time because I'm in Arizona and we don't change our clocks. So for part of the year, I am on Pacific time, even though the rest of the area is on Mountain time. But now I actually go back to Mountain time, so I have to change my mindset. Because now instead of 5:30 in Pacific, I'm in 6:30 because that's equal to 5:30 Pacific where I am now. Don't even try to go there. It's just confusing. But anyhow, so I don't know. Most people don't even like daylight savings time. And if we got rid of it, then we wouldn't even have to worry about saying what time zone we're in. But who knows what's going to happen with that. So anyhow, my show, Another Fork in the Road, is it's for anyone with an interest in brain injury, anyone with a brain injury, and anyone who is caring for a brain injured survivor. Brain injury is not discriminating. It can happen to anyone, anytime, and anywhere. And folks, it does all too often. The Brain Trauma Foundation states that there are more than 5 million people in the United States, just in the United States alone, living with some form of brain injury. But do you know that most folks do not even know about brain injury? It's weird. I know I never did, though. I mean, now I can't stop thinking about brain injury, and I think about it whenever I see a child in a grocery cart sitting by him or herself without mom right next to him or her. You know, I think about it when I see somebody goofing around and walking down the street, not paying attention to what they're doing, you know. I'm thinking about it all the time. And that happened when it came to live on my doorstep, when my husband David had a brain injury in 2005. So on Another Fork in the Road, I try to raise awareness of brain injury and help folks to understand what survivors and caregivers experience, because although brain injury happens to a person, to the survivor, it's also an issue that involves the family members and the friends, the caregivers. So it's not just a solitary problem. So we look at topics through brain injury, through the caregiver's eyes as well as the survivor's eyes. And I, as a survivor, often give my comments about what's going on in my life because my husband David has a brain injury. So on the third Sunday of each month, I interview a brain injury survivor or caregivers to see how they traverse their world of brain injury. I often host therapists or medical professionals and authors, a lot of authors, to gain insight into what they offer survivors. Because authors are people that usually have gone through the brain injury, and they are usually writing about their experience. And I think that is so important to hear firsthand from folks what it is like to have a brain injury, because you can only imagine. And even as a caregiver, I can only imagine. I still don't know exactly what it's like, even though I'm a lot closer to brain injury and can understand a lot of it. I don't get it all, believe me, folks, and I wouldn't even try to convince you that I did. So on the first Sunday of the month, and that would be this right now, I host a discussion panel to examine pertinent topics about brain injury, things related to brain injury such as depression or neural fatigue or anger or various symptoms of brain injury. And I focus usually on just one topic, and I do my research, and we get the panel up here. Usually it's survivors, a lot of caregivers. And like I said, it could be other people too. It could be those medical professionals. And we talk about it, and we give our input about what we're seeing from our points of view as we go through it, in whatever phase we're going through it, you know, in through the brain injury. So tonight, let me just tell you a little bit about me first. For those who might be new to my show, here's a little snippet about me. I came on the brain injury scene in 2005, as I mentioned earlier, when my husband David had a brain injury. At that time, I knew nothing of brain injury. And if you read my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, you will glean how ignorant I was about the seriousness of brain injury, even from the time that we called 911. I had no clue. I really totally was clueless on this. And but since then, we're more than 18 years now and beyond it, and I have learned a lot. So I want to share those kinds of thoughts that I have with you. I shared David's story and my story. I guess I have to call it my story too, because we're together. We're a team. And it's happened to, like I said before, both of us. David has the brain injury, but I'm also experiencing repercussions from his brain injury. Let's put it that way. I'm not experiencing what he is feeling, of course, and I would never pretend to do that, but I do have things that happen to me because of it as well. So we like to get that out there, because with every brain injury survivor, there are the family members, there are the friends, there are the caregivers that are experiencing it in some ways as well. So in August of 2014, when I first became a host on the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com, and I started my show, Another Fork in the Road, I did my first four shows just talking about our experience, you know, how David got the brain injury, what happened, how a neural surgeon came up to me and said, oh, he'll make a great organ donor. Ay, ay, ay. Did that scare the heck out of me? But it's a quote, you know. So, and all of those things I share openly in my book. So I think that people need to be able to hear an honest account of what one person's brain injury was all about. So I then in the last show in November, I featured a discussion with David himself. And so David got to put his views out there. Everyone heard how I saw his brain injury, but he was able to discuss his version of it, which wasn't very much in the beginning because he was in a coma for a long time and he really didn't know what was going on. 4 months. But after that, you know, he was able to give his what he did know and acknowledge what he didn't know, or basically that. So so then in April 2020, when the pandemic was happening, and it was about 15 years after David's brain injury, because he is the pandemic was happening. That was a big thing there. The pandemic was happening. So because David's a retired professor from Columbia University and he's in microbiology, he understood a lot about what was going on with COVID. And what he didn't understand, he searched and researched from fellow researchers and friends about the issue, the pandemic. And he would share those things on my blog. survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. And this is the point of the show I always remember to tell you, please get a pencil and paper near you so that if I say a blog or URL or website, that you can jot it down so that you can look it up later on. Not now, but later on. So I'll probably say that name a lot, several times tonight, but I'll give it to you one more time just in case I don't get to it again. But it's called survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. It's all one word, and it's all lowercase. So, yeah, so check it out. And on that website, there's just so much information. I have survivor and caregiver interviews. So if you are interested in doing an interview and you want to get your story out there and perhaps even be on my show here, contact me. Contact me at Donna O'Donnell Figurski. I'll spell that one. That's a long one. DonnaOdonnellFigurski@gmail.com. You can contact me if you're interested, but first go over to the blog and see if you're interested. And there is a questionnaire over there, survivor's questionnaire, and there's a caregiver's questionnaire. So you can just fill it out and pop it in the mail to me, and I'll be happy to get you on the blog. And then we will talk about later if you want to get on to the show to talk about your brain injury, so or your caregiving experience or whatever it is. So you can find all my shows also archived on that blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. Just click on the air show menu. The show menu is the one that is going to have almost 200 interviews that I've done since 2014. So, yeah, so check it out. I'm supposed to have notes on this, but do I ever have them? No. Sorry, folks. I guess that's just part of who I am and what I do. I'm sorry. But, and if you want to learn more about David in the search bar, or if you want to learn more about anything, any topic, or any person that you have seen on social media and you want to see if we've talked to them, just type their name into the search bar. Again, that's on the right-hand side. And then you can also read my complete story in my book called Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, which was published by Right Life Publishing, and it was released in November of 2018, actually November 1st. So we just celebrated its fifth birthday. I was so excited on November 1st to realize that my book has been out in the world for 5 years. It can go to kindergarten now. That's so cool. So anyhow, Prisoners, as I so fondly call it, can be found as a print book, as an e-book, and as an audiobook at all your local book cons. Just if they don't have them there, you can go online for sure to get it at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. But if they don't have it in your brick-and-mortar store, ask them. They can order it. And I think it's actually, even the print book, I think it's on sale right now. At least the last time I looked, it was a couple days ago. So you might want to go over and poke around and see what you think. And if you want to hear the audiobook, well, I'm the reader on that. So you get to listen to me for, I think it's 10 hours. Holy moly. So and if you do go get it, oh, don't forget your local library, too. And again, if they don't have it, ask. They can order it. And then you can have all your friends read it, too. So, and if you do read it, please write a review, because a review is a book's best friend. It lets everyone else in the world know about the book. Well, anybody that takes the time to look at that area. But it really does help. So I hope that you will do that. So you can also go to my website, DonnaFigurski.com. to learn more about me. You'll learn a whole lot more about Prisoners. You can read my blog, Bookity Blog, over there. That's always fun. And a lot of good, fun stories there, sometimes sad. And tonight, I just hope that you're going to find my show fun and informative. And I hope that you'll visit the shows of other hosts on the Brain Injury Radio Network, because we have shows on almost every single night from 7 to 10 p.m., and on the weekends we start our shows at 5:30 p.m. like I did tonight. And again, that's Pacific time, so make your conversion in the time. So Brain Injury Radio airs across the United States. It's in every single state, and it's in 36 countries. Wow, that's cool. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show tonight. So tonight, we decided to have it's supposed to be a panel show, and I'm going to just tell you what happened. We had several people signed up for the show, and one person had to cancel out today because her son had a seizure, and of course that takes precedence over anything. So I sure hope that Norma and her son Stephen are doing okay right now, and that he'll be back in the swing of things soon, I hope. You know, seizures, you never know what's going to happen with them. And then I have two people that were supposed to be on that happen to be, one is in Italy, one is in, I think it's Cancun. Her husband surprised her with a wedding anniversary trip. Well, you know, what would you do? Balance it out, folks. Stay home and be on my show or go to Cancun? Well, I don't know. If my husband gave me a Cancun trip, I would probably stay home here and do the show. No, I'd probably go, frankly. Yeah, so anyhow, we do have Kelly Tuttle, who is here tonight, and she is going to be my panel of one. Well, I'll be our other panelist. So, yeah, and so I'm really excited that Kelly has joined us tonight. And tonight we're going to do a show called Talk About It. And the only thing that differs it from the last Talk About It is, in the title, is the date and the content. The content will be different, obviously, and it will be anything we want to talk about. So basically tonight's show is one of those open-ended talk shows, and my guest, Kelly, and I will talk about whatever pops up in our conversation. So let's set the scene first. We're sitting around a table in a favorite coffee shop, and you guys, come on in. You can sit around the same table with us. You're welcome. Coffee shops, especially the independent shops, are some of my favorite places to hang out. With my computer and an open creative mind and a steamy cup of coffee with a dollop of Cool Whip on top, I am in my happy place. So joining me at the table this evening, as I said, is brain injury survivor Kelly Tuttle. And we're going to find out in a few minutes what Kelly's favorite coffee shop happy places are. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Kelly. Kelly Tuttle said that she joined the Head Injury Survivors Club. And it really is, folks. But she joined it in 2015. And that's a club that you do not want to become a member of. Yet so many unknowingly or unexpectedly join it every year. As I told you earlier, there are 5 million people just in the United States alone dealing with brain injury. That's a lot. So, but it's a club that pretty much guarantees a lifelong membership. It's not like a broken leg or an arm where it's going to heal up in 6 months. No, 6 weeks. Sorry, 6 months is a long time, even 6 weeks, but it's not like that. Brain injury is a forever thing, and in some aspects of it. And it's different for everybody, and we're going to talk about things like that now. Yet, the initiation into this club usually requires that something happens to alter your brain. And it can be a blow to your head from an assault. It can be a sports injury, a trip or a stumble. Boy, I've done those a few times. Thankfully, my head hasn't hit the concrete. But I know it's happened to a lot of people. And it can be a malfunction of your brain from something like a hemorrhage, an aneurysm, or an AVM, arterial venous malformation, all of which David suffered. It can be from a car crash or a whiplash. It can be from shaken baby syndrome. Boy, is that ever sad. There are just so many ways that a brain injury can occur. For Kelly, it was the car crash when a car pulled out in front of her unexpectedly, causing the accident. That accident will, in one way or another, affect Kelly for her whole life. Kelly Tuttle is the author of After the Crash, How to Keep Your Job, Stay in School, and Live Life After Brain Injury. And I read this book, and I interviewed Kelly about her book and her brain injury in, I think it was maybe August or late July. I can't remember exactly. So, again, so there you go. If you go to my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com, and type in Kelly Tuttle's name, just Kelly is good, or T-U-T-T-L-E for Tuttle, you will be able to find her her blog or her show. And she'll also have a survivor's interview there, too. So you'll find a few things that Kelly has been involved in. So, yeah, so go ahead and check it out. Again, do it after the show. Tomorrow would be fine because some of you, I know it's going to be pretty late right now. So, okay, before we begin, I want to share some of my favorite places to hang out and have coffee. And, of course, write, because that's what I do. Coffee shops for me are places for chatting to meet friends or writing, solitude. Oh, I love it. In northern New Jersey, one of my favorite places was the Fine Grind. I don't even remember what town it was in, but it was about a 45-minute drive that I had to go to get to it. But you could find me there every Friday morning with a bunch of other writers, each of us working on our own projects. And I actually wrote much of my 3 award-winning book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, there. The other parts of it I would write in my outside office under a tree next to my house in Nutley, New Jersey. In Arizona, where I am now, I met with my writing group at the local Starbucks or Panera's to write for about, well, they would write for about 2 hours, and then we'd write, we'd talk. It was a schedule, and we kept to it. And then after that, I would stay for an hour and a half more, so I could write in solitude. But during the pandemic, there's that word again, we had to meet virtually on Zoom, and we still do. We never went back to the in-person writing. Yeah, this seems to have worked for us. So we still meet on the Zoom chat, and it's also on a Friday. I don't know why, but something about Fridays and writing, I guess. I completed my teaching book there, and the current working title for that book is You Can Do It, Make Your Primary Classroom a Learning Play Yard. And that manuscript is out on submission right now. So please, everyone, right now, for 1 second, take a deep breath, cross your fingers, and send that wish out to the universe. I need to get that book accepted and get it into print so we can all look at that, too. That's cool. Anyhow, Kelly, do you have a favorite coffee hut that you like to hang out in? Do you do that at all?
Oh, yes. I love coffee shops, especially independent coffee shops. And right now, one of my favorite coffee shops is Lily's Coffee Shop. It is on Main Street in Cambria, California.
Oh. Wow, Lily's, huh? In Cambria. Figure out where that is. Maybe I'll meet you there someday. That would be fun.
That sounds like
and
fun.
And maybe it'll be a Friday.
Yeah.
On a Friday even. So for now, we're going to call tonight's show the Fork in the Road Cafe. That's a little corny, but why not? So, Kelly, before we start to ramble, can you give us a bit of background on you and how you became part of the brain injury community?
Sure. So just like you said, it happened after a car accident. And I thought that I would be able to just shake it off and go back to my old life. But I struggled to get back to work, to get to be a supportive parent and spouse and go back to my martial arts studies. And I kept hitting a wall and hitting a wall. And after 3 months, of trying to do so, I finally figured out that I had not recovered from my concussion and that I needed more help. And I saw, eventually did see a physical medicine rehab doctor who helped me get on to the right road of recovery, sending me to the appropriate specialist, such as speech therapy, physical therapy, neurophysical therapy. And it took me a really long time to kind of put together strategies and compensatory techniques to support myself so that I can continue to work and live after my my brain injury. And on my 5-year anniversary, from my car accident, I decided to write a book because I didn't want people to feel like I did after my head injury. I didn't want them to feel alone. And I wanted them to know that there was hope to get better. And my biggest question after my brain injury was, how do I get back to work? And so it was really important for me to write a book that talked about strategies and coping mechanisms to support you at work and in school while you're waiting for your brain to heal. And that's the majority of the focus of the book.
Yeah, and that's a huge problem for people. I want to just address something you said before we go into that area. But you said that it took you 3 months to realize that you had a problem after your car accident. You had a car accident. You weren't, you didn't realize the problem that was with your brain at that time, because it doesn't necessarily show. It doesn't manifest itself necessarily right away. And so people think, oh, I'm okay. And like you said, oh, I can just shake it off and be fine. I'll be okay in a few days. I can go back to work and do things. But then what happens is things start to go a little haywire. You know, maybe something isn't working right. Your memory isn't coming through properly. You're getting exhausted and you're wondering why. I used to be able to run circles around this job, and now I can barely, you know, work for an hour or something. So I think the point I'm trying to make here is that if you do have an injury, such as a car accident or a trip, stumble, fall and hit your head, if you've damaged your head in any way, and even if you don't see the proverbial scars, which some people say they do see, even if you don't see them, get yourself checked out. Get under the care of a physician so that they can keep an eye on you. Not that all doctors understand brain injury that well, but that's how we get them to learn more about it, is by presenting ourselves to them with the problems and working it out, because it's becoming much more common to hear about. Yeah, brain injury isn't any more common than it was a long time ago, but it's more common to hear about it now, where we never did before. And I think when the soldiers, the troops are coming back from the Middle East wars, that's when we started to hear about IED concussions, and that's when we started to hear about brain injury. When the football players were having CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which only can be diagnosed after you're dead, you know, so it's an autopsy thing, an autopsy result that you can find from through an autopsy. So, I mean, that's not going to help you, but that did help bring the brain injury to the forefront of the NFL players. So that's, you know, at least we're now in the realm of knowing a little bit more about brain injury. So what I really hope that you will do, if you're out there listening and if you do have a head injury of any sort, get it checked out. Just definitely get it checked out. And then I just want to go back to now move on with returning to work. Because after brain injury, when Kelly was saying that that's what her book is about, because it's one of the things that she really wanted to get back to. She she thought she was okay, and she wanted to get back into her workforce and return to her normal life. But after brain injury, so many people want that same thing. They want to return to work as soon as they can. And for many, it may suggest to them that their injury is over. It's like proof. Okay, we're better now. I'm better. Despite that, most of us know that brain injury is forever. At least those of us who are in the field now and know about brain injury. Yeah, we know. You're going to have repercussions from brain injury forever in some way or another. And it might be a feeling of returning to normal for them. And, of course, that's what we all want after something like that, is to go back to normal. It might be an issue of self-esteem. Okay, if you don't have your job, then who are you? So many people in America rely on the fact of who they are, what they do, as their self-esteem kind of thing. Their self-esteem is built by that. And I mean, and just to think about it, when I go to a party, go out to visit and meet anybody new, one of the first questions most people ask me is, what do you do? You know, what do you do? Well, of course, I like to ask that because I want to make connections. If I meet another teacher, I'm all excited because then I have a core to talk to them about. If I meet somebody with a brain injury, I have something there. I have a common ground for them to chat about. If somebody's doing jewelry, and I make a lot of jewelry, so solidifies our relationship. And so I think that's the reason why people do that. But because of that question, it becomes uncomfortable if you can't say that you are a valued person in the community. And I think that's what happens when people have a brain injury and they can't say, well, I am or I do. And it's a big issue of self-esteem. Lack of funds coming into the household from a job could be a huge concern. You know, now there's only one paycheck coming in. That can be a real problem. There are so many reasons why folks want or need to return to work as soon as they can after their brain injury. And I can actually talk to much of this with my husband, David. David lived and breathed science. He loved his job as a scientist. He was a microbiologist at Columbia University in New York City. His brain injury, including 3 brain surgeries in 2 weeks for a subarachnoid hemorrhage, which is a brain bleed, an aneurysm, which is another form of a brain bleed, and an arterial venous malformation, which is a tangle of blood vessels that are like a time bomb and can potentially burst, causing a bleed again. But that didn't kill him. But I knew that not being able to return to his laboratory just might. The chairman of David's microbiology department was encouraging, thank goodness. He and the HR, the human resources office, made many accommodations to David so that he would be able to return, he would be able to re-enter his scientific life with success. That was a lifesaver. He worked shorter weeks at his lab in the office, and then he worked the rest of the week at some home. So that made it easier. So he didn't have to commute into Columbia more than 2 days a week, because that took a huge toll on him too. And there is he was picked up by fellow professor friends and car services and things of that nature, but that's, you can read about that in the book. But he worked the rest of the week from home. And I could see plainly that even the 2 days at work in his lab left him completely depleted. When he came home at night, that was it. He was done. David's return to work was good for him. It energized him because that's who he was, a scientist. But he had to do it in smaller chunks. Gone were his 14-hour days, and literally that's what he worked prior to his brain injury. But for many survivors, it won't be easy for them to return to the jobs they once had. They must really examine how their workplace will affect them. I had a guest on the show some years ago who was greatly bothered by noise and light in her office. And there were too many people milling about, too many loud conversations. And like I said, the light was overbearing for her. For those without a brain injury, this would look like a normal office atmosphere. The buzz and the hum and the busyness, the running back and forth. So, of course, folks didn't understand when that survivor complained about the noise and the light, and they could not relate. But fortunately, my guest at that time was able to escape to a quiet area when it got to be so overwhelming that she was not able to function. So a little time in a quiet area helped her. It would refresh her enough to be able to stand the cacophony of the office again for some time. And then she'd have to redo it again. So perhaps this survivor might have considered a change in workplace, one that offers a more sanguine atmosphere, a library or a nursery for flowers and plants, not for children. But so those are some of the things that you have to think about when you are considering returning to work. And Kelly, how did you feel about returning to work after your brain injury? Were you nervous? I mean, I can imagine, but can you give us your thoughts on that?
It was really tough because I didn't have any guidance, and I really didn't understand the symptoms that I was suffering from. It took me a long time to figure out that the reason why I had fatigue, dizziness, and irritability was because I was light and sound sensitive, and I had difficulty with focus and maintaining concentration. So if anybody came and talked to me or interrupted me while I was trying to focus, it really made me grumpy, and it just wore me out. In fact, one time driving home, I fell asleep at the wheel. I think we talked about that in the past show.
Yeah, we did.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, that's really dire. That's very dangerous. And you're very fortunate that nothing happened there, but I can see how that can happen.
Yeah, so, you know, after a head injury, there's a real, you know, for a lot of survivors, there's a lack of self-awareness, a lack of knowing your symptoms, your capabilities, and your tolerance. And so that's why I think it takes a long time for people to figure out that, hey, you know, my brain isn't working right and I need help and support.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what people have to realize, that they have to be able to, for that support. They have to be able to acknowledge it and realize that they need it, and then let people know, because other people are not going to understand that. You know, so it's really
exactly
that's a very important thing. So it's being open about it. And once you've learned enough about your own self and your own injury, then it's best to get it out there. Talk to the people that are close to you. Discuss things. David and I do a lot of chatter about brain injury. I'm checking with him occasionally to see, how are you? How are you doing now? Are you feeling anything different? Has anything changed? Now, like I said, we're 18 years beyond, almost 19 in January. So we're 18, that's a long time. And so there's no drastic changes, but it's always good to find out if there is something going on, and if there's something that we can do to improve some situation. And I can tell you about one little thing right now. So David, when he, we've done a couple of things, and these are more recent. David will bite his lip or his tongue or the inside of his cheek when he's talking or when he is eating, a lot of times when he's eating, because it takes coordination to do that, and part of his right side of his face is kind of paralyzed. It doesn't work well, let's put it that way. And so if he's not actually thinking about what he is doing when he's chewing, his tongue will get in the way, or his cheek will get in the way, and he'll bite down on it. And it's so painful, and it's bitten, you know, he's bitten down on it so that it's bled many times. Well, it became very disturbing because it hurts, number one. I can see his grimace. He doesn't always tell me when he does it, but I can tell. You know, and I can see the grimace on his face when it happens and the annoyance actually too. He's like, oh, darn it. But he doesn't let me in on the secret of that of the annoyance. He just kind of keeps it to himself and just goes on. But so we have to think about it. We talk. And that's one of the big things, I think, communication. We talk about it. Like, what can we do about this? Well, we came up with a couple of things. Well, we went to the dentist and we talked to the dentist about it. And to see if there's any way he can maybe get a mouth guard or something that will protect his mouth while he's, talking, eating. How do you do that? I don't know. But we wanted to figure out even sleeping, because he'll bite himself while he's sleeping. And that also wakes him up and causes problems. So one of the technicians there said, you know what? Why don't you try a mouth guard like football players use? And we thought, oh, God, that's a great idea. Let's try it. And so David did. He was open to the idea, and it works. He wears it at night when he goes to bed, and he doesn't bite himself at night anymore. That doesn't solve the problem during the day eating and talking, but it does solve that problem. The other thing that we did for eating was, well, you know how people can't chew gum and walk and chew gum at the same time? Okay, well, David can't talk and eat at the same time because, again, he has to concentrate on both. And when you have a brain injury, it takes extra energy to do everything. So when he's chewing his food, he has to concentrate on each chew so that he doesn't bite his lip or his tongue or his inner cheek. And so if you're talking to somebody and having a conversation, that isn't working. So we decided that we can't talk during dinner. Now, that was hard for me. David went with it very easily. He just stopped talking and he just focused on eating. But me, if something comes into my head, it comes out of my mouth. That's me. That's how I work. So if I'm thinking of something, I got to tell him immediately. Well, I had to curb that a lot, and it was hard. It was really, really hard. But I can truthfully say now that we don't talk during dinner anymore. So it works, you know. And so he doesn't bite himself as much anymore. I does occasionally, but it's not the constant thing where if he bites himself, he's in pain for 2 weeks afterwards. They say the mouth heals fast, but obviously not his, because it would be very painful. So there are ways to go about things that you do that are happening to you that you have to adjust or compensate for and see what else works for you. So, yeah, so that's my story about that one. I'm sticking to it.
Well,
do you have anything like that, Kelly, that you have to deal with?
Well, no, I didn't. But I would like to add how important it is that people with brain injuries do not go to their appointments alone, that they take a trusted patient advocate. Because, like I was saying before, there is that lack of awareness and lack of understanding of your limitations and symptoms.
Yeah.
And between the caregiver and the patient, you guys can put together a picture to help the specialist, whoever you're seeing at the time, identify maybe symptoms that the both of you weren't aware of because of the different perspectives you're sharing. And to come up with the best treatment or therapy, or say there's a lot of stuff going on with the patient, then the patient and the caregiver can advocate
as to what's the most important issue to address first, because sometimes you can't do it all, and it is best just to focus on one thing as you kind of work through your recovery process. But that's for sure very important. Even healthy people should take a caregiver or an advocate with them to their appointments, because healthcare appointments are stressful, and sometimes even if you have a healthy brain, you don't hear or remember everything that your provider is telling you or recommending. So that second person's great because they can remember stuff, they can share things maybe you forgot to share, and then they can take notes for you that you can look back on later.
Absolutely, Kelly. I was gonna bring that up if you didn't. But yeah, because you're right. There is so much that a provider might be telling you about something, and you get, you know, maybe focus on one point but forget about the other things. And after the appointment, it's over. It's done, you know. And you if you haven't written it down or had somebody else in the background listening too, you might lose some very important things that you might want to have discussed later at home with someone else. So it's definitely a good thing for anyone to have an advocate with them, to have a friend or a family member to go with them to a doctor for a visit, but definitely for someone with a brain injury who is not going to maybe comprehend everything that they're saying either. It's,
right.
You know, maybe they have memory loss too, you know, and they can't put it all together, can't remember it to put it together. So, yeah, very good point.
If you're unable to get someone to go to your appointment with you, remind your provider that you do have issues with memory and to request the things that the provider recommended to be put in writing for you.
Yeah. I know my doctor.
That's a really good...
Go ahead. I'm going to be quiet.
I know with a little bit of a delay, but what I was going to say is that it's a really good work and school accommodation to ask for also is when you're given a project or instructions or homework that you need to do to get the directions in writing. And that way you can, if you forget something in the discussion, if it's in writing, you can always look back to remind you what was discussed and what was asked for you to do.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, David had a conversation with somebody that we had to get some information from the other day. And as soon as I heard him on the phone, I immediately went in so that I could also listen and reiterate what the person said. But I also suggested to David while he was on the phone, ask him to also answer those questions in writing so that when they came in the email, it was just a simple sentence that the man had to say on each question, but it was there and it wasn't going to be gone and lost memory or confused and David's going to say, well, no, he said this, and I say, no, I heard this. But it was right there on screen. And so it made it easier. So that just goes to what you just said. Get it down. Have them write it. My doctor, David's my primary doctor, does write up a summary report. So we do kind of get the gist of what she said, what meds we're supposed to have been taking or what we can get rid of or whatever, you know, that she needs is important, the referrals or whatever. And I think that's a really good process because I don't have to, I mean, I used to sit there, and I still do sometimes with my notebook, and just jotting down everything she's saying. But then I realized she's really going to summarize it up pretty well because her tech is sitting over there typing away while she's doing the exam. So that's good. I mean, you need that kind of thing. And that's, that's even for regular people, like you said, that have a regular brain, a healthy brain. So, and if we need it, then definitely it could be beneficial to those who might have a brain injury, and that might have their brain impaired in some way. So, let's talk about cognitive damage. Did you want to say something to that, Gloria?
Oh, no, go ahead. Let's talk about cognitive damage.
Okay, let's talk about that. So when a brain has cognitive damage, and cognitive is a big word, I know, and it just means thinking damage, the ability to think and to process and to understand what people are saying and how you are saying things. So it's just your processing, your whole processing format. And when that becomes damaged, it can make your thinking blurry. And it's not easy for a cognitively impaired brain to sort out logical sense of things. And sometimes, frankly, it's impossible. But I bet some of our listeners here are thinking back, well, they probably aren't, but I'm going to think, maybe you are. Maybe you're thinking back to building a crib for your newborn. Okay, think about that. Anybody out there thinking of that? Okay, maybe you're assembling a two-wheeler bike for your six-year-old. I could go on with a lot of examples like that, but it can be difficult, even without a brain injury. That can be a daunting task because there are directions. Do this, do this, do this, do that after you do this. And sometimes the parts aren't even all there. But with a brain injury, that can be a nightmare, taking two or three times the time to find success and completely draining the brain of all energy, because just reading those directions can send you into a flurry without a brain injury. I know it does me anyhow. Maybe some people, my brother's good at that. He can do that much better than I can. But anyhow, one example is David and I recently built a freestanding cabinet for our foyer. And it was very cute. It's very, it looked very simple. It's straightforward. And I didn't think it was going to be any big problem. But let me tell you, I almost don't want to talk about it because it was a nightmare that lasted 2 weeks, with parts covering every inch of my living room. And it took two of us to do this. And mind you, David only has one working hand. His other has ataxia, so it shakes uncontrollably. Well, try to hammer a nail with that. It doesn't work. So David and I worked together on this cabinet, on this little whatever it is, a cabinet, I guess. And for at least 2 weeks, I thought it was never going to get done because we had to take it slowly and in stages because it was too difficult. Okay, first off, this is what David did, and I thought this was good. I think he would do this even if he didn't have a brain injury, because that's just the organized science person he is. He went through the directions two or three times, number one. He lined up and he checked. First off, to make sure every screw, nut, and bolt was there, and lined them all up on the floor. Then he got all his tools out that he thought he might have to use. So we had screwdrivers and hammers and wrenches lined up on the floor in the size that they are. And then the pieces of this big cabinet, all the different pieces. Lined up and stacked up for light pieces and all that. And so he knew what he needed to do. Even doing all of that, it still took us forever, partially because it was a nightmare in action, and partially because he couldn't sustain more than an hour or an hour and a half of building this. And now, maybe somebody without a brain injury would have had it done in no time. Like, I think my brother, who is very handy with building things like this, could have done it in absolutely no time. My son, too. But me, who is not inclined mechanically this way to do things like that, and David, who would have been able to do it much easier without a brain injury was really impaired doing this. So it was like, oh, my God. And so although David's brain isn't cognitively damaged, fortunately, we're happy for that, this was a project that caused him to expend too much energy, just having to do all that, pick up the different pieces, trying to get them together, me holding something while he's, you know, pounding it in, or me pounding it in while he's holding, whatever. It was just awful. And a lot of people have to deal with things like that. So can you talk about any issues with cognitive damage that you deal with? Do you have any cognitive damage? Maybe you don't.
What, you know, while I was listening to you talking, one of the things that, like, I talk to my caregivers, as a nurse practitioner, I'm talking to my caregivers of my patients with Parkinson's, or they have multiple sclerosis or a traumatic brain injury, is we do talk about cognitive fatigue. And and basically what it is that your brain uses up more energy to do minimal things. And also after a brain injury, the brain does not fully recover despite plenty of sleep and rest. So it's kind of like you go from having a brand new cellular battery to a flip phone. It's like you're a new phone. You can have all kinds of apps open. You can be surfing the web pages while listening to your digital downloaded music. And then after a head injury, you're down to a flip phone with a battery life of 1 hour a day, and no way of replugging in to regenerate that battery throughout the day. So a lot of times when I talk to my patients, I always talk about, and I use this for myself, like my hardest project or your hardest project, you do first thing in the morning for whatever your battery life that you can spend on that for the day, whether it's work on, you know, maybe for me initially starting to write my book, it was only 20 minutes on the weekend. So start your most complicated project or your most important thing, whether it's a phone call or filling out paperwork, first thing in the morning. And then the other thing is breaking, just like David did, break down the project into small steps and make a goal of just accomplishing one step at a time, because it's very easy to get overwhelmed when you have a brain injury and there's multiple steps, and then that person loses the motivation to complete the project. What did I talk about? I talked about first thing in the morning, breaking down the process, and then also just knowing some days you have good brain days and some days you have bad brain days. And if it's a good brain day, you take on that project that you want to do. If it's a bad brain day, then you give yourself the understanding and support to rest and do the minimum to get through the day and not feel guilty about it.
That's a key word right there, not feel guilty about it. You have to realize that, you know, your brain is compromised. It's been, you know, it's been hurt. It's been damaged, and it's trying to repair itself. And brains take a very, very long time to repair. But they can improve, but they probably will never get completely better. But one of the things that David learned, and this is relatively recently, because I'm working on a book with a co-author right now, and it's a conversations between a survivor and a caregiver about brain injury. So so we're talking, and we're giving this book, and then David reads the final draft of it. And he, I think, or maybe it was actually, I think maybe he heard this from our conversation on one of these shows here. But we also have it in the book too. So, and it was like Deb Brandon, who is the co-author of this book that I'm working on, said that she can only do so much in a day. And after a certain time of the day, she has to stop. And David's heard that because David is a workaholic. David, like I said, when he was working, he was working 14-hour days. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. But even till a couple years ago, David was working till about 6, 7 at night and then would still go back to work after dinner in our home about doing something, whether it was editing, because he was my first editor for my book, or editing any of my papers that I'm writing for publication, any, you know, this show, checking out my, you know, show, is this, do you think it's engaging enough, whatever. He's always working. But he started to talk about he wasn't being as effective in the later afternoon, and it was bothering him, and he was complaining about it, saying, you know, I just didn't get as much as I wanted to get done today. And he was feeling bad about it, and that's the worst part. He was feeling bad. He's doing all this stuff that he doesn't even have to do. I mean, yeah, I do want him to do it. But, you know, it's not like you're going to a job and you have to do that. But it kind of is. He does have to do it. But anyhow, he realized that he had to stop by 12:30, 1 o'clock. And if he pushes onward, because this is cognitively draining, you said the words there, Kelly, and I grabbed those words right away. It's cognitively draining him to do all this work. His brain is working extra hard because it is damaged, because it has an injury. And so he would lose the afternoon, and then he would be upset with himself because he couldn't do anything in the afternoon. So he decided that, and he has an alarm. That's another good thing. He sets his alarm and he says, okay, that's it. When it comes to 12:30, 1 o'clock, and I have to tell you, he does push it. He pushed it today to about an hour and a half longer. And he came out and told me that he was just a little bit difficult. But, you know, when you're onto something and you're on a roll, you really want to keep going. But you have to make that decision to stop, because you will say to yourself, and I'm telling this story because I know a lot of people are like that. They just want to keep going, working, doing whatever they're doing. But there's going to be, as my mother would say, the piper to pay. You're going to have to pay the consequences eventually, whether it be you can't do anything, you're going to fall asleep, you're going to have to take a nap, whatever. You're going to lose time by pushing your time. So sometimes it's just better to stop, get done what you can, stop, and then move on to something else that, like you said, is less taxing. Do that hard thing first thing in the morning. Get that out of the way. And then maybe you can get some of the lesser jobs done, the things that aren't going to tax your brain as much. So those are good suggestions. You know, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, even with healthy, even people with healthy brains, the brain uses 20% of your body's energy every day.
Yeah.
And then if you have a brain injury or you've had a stroke, then your brain doesn't work efficiently, and it uses even more energy to do the minimum, to think, to process, to organize, to memorize, to read. And then there's very little energy left for physical activities emotional modulation. That takes energy. And so if you push yourself, you may then have bursts of anger or irritability or headaches, worsening of dizziness. And if you don't pay attention, you may find yourself, like me, falling asleep at the wheel. This fatigue is serious. It is not like regular fatigue. It will shut you down if you don't pay attention.
Good advice. You have to pay attention to your body. And who's better to do that but yourself? You know your own body. Mm-hmm. You know what you can do, what you're capable of. And so if somebody says, oh, you're fine, you can do this. I mean, if that goes back to when your friends are upset with you because you can't go out to dinner with them or out to the dance or the nightclubs or go shopping or whatever, because you know that you don't have the energy, you don't have it in you at that point, and they don't understand. But you know. And so you have to make those decisions for yourself to juggle, I guess. Juggle what you can do at different times of the day. And, yeah, I think that's important to know. And there are times when I'll ask David, I don't know, what was it? There's nothing coming up now. Like for a doctor's appointment, I will say, what time do you want to go? And he'll usually tell me he wants to go later in the morning because he doesn't want to get up and rush around to get ready because he can't. He can't rush mm-hmm. around to get ready. So, you know, that kind of thing. He knows what's going to be work best for him. So we have to go along with that. I'm going to go into one more little thing, Kelly. We're running out of time almost, but I want to go into one little thing and see if we can just cover a little bit of this, and that's new normal. You know, we mentioned before, brain injury forever. And it's not like a disease. It's not like an ailment that can be cured. It's not like that broken bone that will mend. And although some progress may be made towards the healing, many aspects of the injured brain cannot be repaired. And parts that can may take forever. I mentioned all this stuff earlier as new pathways are found or built. So what can survivors do to carry on a somewhat new normal life? They have to adapt. They have to compensate. They have to take another mm-hmm. fork in the road and keep moving on. So, Kelly, can you talk about how you adapted to your new normal? I know you've done some of that in this conversation already, but I know you also changed careers to adapt to make your life more profitable and comfortable for you.
Well, it started out, I had no idea what I was doing, but I went out and on my deck under the nice warm sun, and I started making a list. On one side of the paper, I listed all the things I could do and wanted to do before my head injury. And then on the other side, I wrote down all the things I could do and wanted to do after my brain injury. And I looked at the two lists, and I actually liked who I was becoming. And that's the new normal is you've got to do some processing, some grieving mm-hmm. And mental processing, and probably employ a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a family counselor, all those specialists that can help you out with the various things that you may be struggling with. But when I looked at that list, well, Kelly, before the car accident was very go, 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 goal-oriented, out the door, doing as much as I could in a 24-hour period. Well, Kelly, after the brain injury, was very relaxed, was very calm, was patient, understanding, empathetic, took time to smell the roses and watch the hummingbirds fly by. So two different people, two different personalities. But I liked the new person I was becoming. I lived a much more simple life. I spent more time with my family and friends and improving my home. And I thought all those were really good things, and I liked the person I was becoming because I was so much more empathetic and compassionate for myself and for others around me. So if you can do that, get to know the new you and see the great things that are in that silver lining of this very dark cloud that you are in right now, it'll help you in your recovery and getting to know you and what you need to have in your life to help you live to your fullest after a brain injury?
That is really, really good advice. And it's interesting to hear you say that, too. I'm not surprised anymore. I used to be surprised when someone said, I like me better after my brain injury. I used to be totally shocked about that because, you know, you lost the person you were before, and now you're telling me that you actually like yourself better. You know, and I've heard that so many times, including from my co-author, Deb. She's told me that countless times, that she likes her new self better. Prior to her brain injury, she was a math professor at Carnegie Mellon, and she was even after her brain injury. But before her brain injury, she was quiet, introverted. You know, as a professor, she had to go out and speak and talk to her students in front of the lecture room and everything, but it wasn't a comfortable position for her. After her brain injury, she became a social butterfly. She enjoyed talking to people. And she says, you know, I don't know. She didn't know why or what happened, but obviously a little switch turned off on one part and the other part came on, and she enjoys her life as it is now, much better than she enjoyed who she was before. And I always thought, like, wow, that's crazy. How can that be? And I first heard this from a friend who had multiple sclerosis and was confined to a wheelchair, could barely stand up to get from her wheelchair to her bed kind of thing, or to the bathroom. And she and David were talking after his brain injury one day. She was in my writing group in New Jersey that I was mentioning earlier. And she said, she asked the question, do you like yourself better now or before? And then I asked her, the question first, and she said, oh, I like myself much better now. I'm a much better person than I was before. I was not a nice person. And I'm thinking, how can that be? She's the sweetest woman, you know? And then she's confined to her wheelchair. So why are you liking this position of your life better than when you were able to get up and walk anywhere you wanted to go? It was very confusing to me, very confusing. I just couldn't understand that. But now I've heard it from so many survivors on survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com when I interview them. That is one of the questions that I ask each interviewee, do you like yourself better now or before, or whatever the question is, I don't remember right now. But it's amazing how many people will say that they like themselves better now. And it's just fascinating and surprising for me to hear that. So, and now you're saying the same thing, that, yeah, you think that you're doing better than you were before, and that's crazy. It's crazy. But, yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't happen overnight, you know. And when I say that, I'm not saying forget the old self, your old self.
Yeah.
And it's okay to be angry and frustrated and sad that you're not that person anymore. You're going to always take that old person forward with you along your life journey. But, you know, it's best to get to know the new you and to be grateful for the new things that this person has brought into your life and in your perspective.
Yeah.
And if you struggle with that transition, if you struggle with that transition, get help. Get help from a counselor, trusted friend, family member, psychologist, you know, get help. Don't do it alone. Let the professionals help you. I mean, you wouldn't expect to put a roof on your house without hiring a roofer. So you would want a specialist to help you out with this too.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's funny. I could ask myself that same question for David. David's changed. You know, he's not the same person he was before. He's not the man that bound up the stairs every day after work and gave me a big hug and kiss and ran out the door to go running. He's not that person that was so vibrant in those ways. But so he's changed, and he's a different kind of person. He came home from the hospital. He was funny. He was much more talkative because, as a scientist, he worked all day, and then he come home and he wanted to be a little quiet, I guess. But I don't know. It was a big change for me to have him. And now, I was married to David. We're married a very, very long time. But I spent almost half of our years married prior to his brain injury, and a good portion of them after his brain injury. So I know two different men in this marriage. I know the uninjured David, and I know the brain-injured David. And the thing is, I like them both. It's really weird. Mm-hmm. So that if the old David came back to me, which I now know will probably never happen, but if he did, I would like that. You know, it would be fun. I'd like to have the old David back. Of course, he's 20 years older now, so almost. He's not going to have that same vibrance, definitely. But still, I would love that. But I love this new guy too. You know, this new person that he is, and he's different. So what would I do? You know, what could I do at that point? I would be having to, I couldn't make that choice anymore. And David's comment right away to that predicament, to that question, is, the old guy left. Good riddance. David, it's like, you got to be kidding me. That old guy is the one I fell in love with. You know, the old guy, but he's got a good attitude. That's basically what it is, and it makes me laugh. It's about, what do you mean? You can't just say that. He was an important part of my life, too. But when David had the brain injury, that part of our lives kind of closed down, and we have, this new life, this new path, this new fork in the road that we're taking, and we're making the lemonade. Let's put it that way. We're doing the best that we can, and so life goes on. And on that note, Kelly, thank you so much. I do have to close out now, and I just want to say thanks to Kelly Tuttle, and for sharing so much of your life with us. And I just want to...
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anytime. Kelly is the author of After the Crash, How to Keep Your Job, Stay in School, and Live Life After Brain Injury. So check her book out on Amazon, folks. Don't forget. So you can read... Kelly's also on Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury, as I mentioned earlier. Just go to... just pop her name in, Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y. And our title, T-U-T-T-L-E. And it'll pop up, so you can read more about Kelly there. There's a lot of things on that blog, on that website, whatever it is. So go check it out. There's Itty Bitty Giant Steps. You can read a lot about my book, Prisoners Without Bars. And you can even find out more about that at my website, DonnaFigurski.com. If you put my name into Google, you're going to find out more than you ever wanted to know about me. So if you ever want to know anything about me, just go Google me. So on my next show, we will be having a guest, and that's going to be a surprise even to me right now. We will have a guest next time in 2 weeks, and that will be on November 19. So tune in every second and fourth Sunday of the month to listen to Lisa Dreyer. She is the host of Mess with MS. I'm not sure if there's a show coming up after me tonight. There usually is, but I'm not positive tonight. So if you loved my show, tell 10 of your friends and join us again in 2 weeks. And if you hated it, well, tell 10 of your enemies. That works for me. So I'm going to see you on November 19th for our next show, same time, same station. And one more time, Kelly Tuttle, thank you so, so much for joining me tonight. I had a blast.
Me too. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Good night, world. Enjoy whatever's coming up in your life next. Yeah, okay. So take care, everybody, and I'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.